I thought it was phenomenal. I was very pleased with our tee to green performance, and then I made a couple really nice par saves from, you know, 4 or 5 feet. But other than that, it was pretty stress-free. And on a Saturday with a lead in a major, that's about as good as I can ask for right there. So really nice to kind of get that one at the end. I got a really good break on my second shot to not be in trouble. And to make a three there, I felt like I stole one or two going into tomorrow. That one on the last was a nice confident boost. I had a lot of putts from about 8 to 15 feet today that didn't go. I need to keep striking the ball the way I struck it today, and then things will take care of it.
Yeah, I'll say Jordan Spieth, the British Open, 54-hole leader. He was 11 under par. The final round is happening live right now at the Royal Birkdale. I should say Birkdale Gold Club in Northwest England. Jordan Spieth bogeyed 3 of the first 4 holes this morning as it is going on live. And him and Kuchar were tied for a second and 8 under right as I was pulling in. He did birdie the 5th. And Kuchar parred it, which put him one more under. So I think it was 9 under him, and Kuchar was 8 under. And how about this kid? I think he's 22 years old, maybe 21 years old. This Li Haotong. Mags, after yesterday, you had a guy that we'll be talking about a little later on. Brandon Grace shoots a 62 for the all-time 8 under par. 62 is the all-time lowest round in the history of major championships. There have been 442 major championships played to date. No one has ever shot better than a 63. Brandon Grace shot a 62 yesterday. Well, how about Li Haotong, who shot a 7 under 63 today and is the leader in the clubhouse right now at 6 under par. What a hell of a round. Hey, well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman, and we are here every Sunday from 8 to 9 on the official radio home of the NHL's newest franchise, the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. Joining me here in the Fox Sports studio in Las Vegas, as always, future Nevada Hall of Fame producer Magnum. We are also streaming on LVSportsNetwork.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM and on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. Without you, there's no show. So if you have something on your mind, give Magnum a call, turn down your radio, and say what you got to say. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University. Today we'll have some final thoughts on NBA Summer League. While we're on the subject of the NBA, we can't leave out the Cavaliers, who might very well be without Kyrie Irving this season. And, of course, the final day of golf's oldest major championship is underway. And according to me, when he is on, the number one golfer in the world, who we just heard from, is in position to take his third major at the ripe old age of 23. Shortly, we'll hear what Coach Brad Stevens of the Celtics had to say when I ran into him at Summer League. And today's Las Vegas 51s report will be conducted with their skipper, Pedro Lopez. Plus, there's a double dose of blazing. And today's Fact This is all about loose juice. On tap at Bubby's University, earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. We're the only majors are mayhem and good times. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. That's right. They are always open. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. To learn more, check out bubbysuniversity.com. Well, as I mentioned, I caught up with Boston Celtics coach Brad Stevens at the Thomas and Mack during Summer League. I talked to him about Summer League, his top draft pick, and what we can expect from the Eastern Conference's number one seed in this year's NBA playoffs.
Stevens, coach of the Celtics, Summer League going on so far. What do you make of Summer League? First of all, your team and the young guys here for the Celtics.
Yeah, I think we're doing okay. Yeah, I think we're as I said just a minute ago in our big media scrum, I think that, you know, we've had some good moments, but we've had some things we've got to do a lot better. And some of the things that guys are doing really translates, and some of it doesn't.
How about your number one draft pick, Jason Tatum, this year? Really, I don't want to say it's easy for him, but he really seems to be transitioning well.
Yeah, I mean, but there are parts of the games that he's you know, really getting pushed and stretched. And so he's going to learn a lot about himself and figure out where he can best impact our team, because it's a different game once September, October starts.
Do you believe in the Summer League? I mean, Markel Foles goes down. It turns out not to be as bad as it looked initially.
Yeah, Summer League's a great thing. I think, you know, obviously nobody wants anybody to get hurt, but these guys are working out and playing open gym all summer anyways. I think the Summer League for the young guys is a great thing.
Your Celtics team, really successful season, number one seed in the East last year. Obviously, the Cleveland Cavaliers, a big hurdle to overcome. But assessment on your team last year and moving forward?
Yeah, whatever, you know, I think every year brings its own new set of challenges, and you tackle them as they get there. And, you know, we'll have to be really committed to one another to be a good team.
Any other moves the Celtics are looking to make to get ready for 2017-2018?
Yes, Danny. Yeah.
Of course, he's talking about Danny Ainge as to who else they'll get. I mean, the Celtics definitely improved. Gordon Hayward is for sure a step up. Amazing, I'm hearing Isaiah Thomas the other day, all 5'8.5" of him, talk about how it's going to be a big payday for him coming up. If I'm not mistaken, Mags, Isaiah Thomas is like 29 years old. He's 5'8.5" on his tiptoes, and he is a defensive liability. I will tell you, he lit up the NBA last year. He was huge reason why the Celtics ended up the number one seed in the Eastern Conference going into the postseason. But he disappeared in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cleveland Cavaliers, literally disappeared by not playing after a certain amount of time. And I'll tell you what, his lack of ability to play defense really showed up against the Cavaliers. And even earlier on in the playoffs, it's something that, you know, when you're that small, granted, he's got a tremendous offensive game, great talent. He can distribute with the best of them, and he can penetrate among the trees. That's his talent. However, when you are that small, you better play some defense. If you remember some little guys like Muggsy Bogues, who was 5'3", the man could play defense. He was a thief in the night. Spud Webb, another little guy, 5'7", could play defense. It's something Isaiah Thomas lacks the ability to do. And, you know, I'm amazed he's talking about what a big payday he's going to get. Man, win something. You guys got destroyed in the Eastern Conference Finals. We realized at that point in time you were nowhere close to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I'm just really surprised, Mags, that he would come out and start talking about big money right now instead of, man, how cool is this? We got Jason Tatum. We got Gordon Hayward. We're going to be an improved basketball team. But it's all about the green stuff, isn't it, brother?
Yeah, and with Isaiah Thomas, I don't know if it's that he can't play defense. I mean, I always hear that about guys. Oh, Melo can't play defense. Is it they can't or they don't?
I think Carmelo Anthony chooses not to play defense at times. I don't think that's the case with Isaiah Thomas.
No, I disagree. I think if you are a superstar competitor, like at the highest level, like these guys are, I think you will find a way to improve your game to where you are no longer a defensive liability. I think a lot of these guys, and, you know,
Why isn't Steph Curry doing that?
Well, because I think, like I said, I don't know if it's a situation where they can't or they don't. You know, and a lot of it, I think, falls on AAU ball, where they focus on look like a superstar. Nobody cares about defense. To me, that's crap. You know, and there's I'm not going to knock AAU. I mean, it's done a lot of good things for a lot of good people. But I think when the game gets to a point where the rules have changed to obviously allow more offense in the game, so guys cannot be the lockdown defenders that they were in the 80s and the 90s. But I think now we have a generation of players who come up where defense has never really been a focus in their coaching. You know, you watch Duke play, and if they're not fouling, they're not playing defense. You know, that's a Krzyzewski thing. Those guys focus on offense. Kentucky, they focus on offense. Defense is kind of a lost art. And the guys who do it really well, they really stand out. The guys who do it really bad, they really stand out. But there's a lot of guys in the middle who are just, they're okay defenders. They're not great. They're not terrible. But the guys who are defensive liabilities, they are the guys we focus on. And, you know, like I said, I don't think it's a situation where he can't. I just think it's a situation where he'd rather focus on his, I mean, because let's be honest, 5 years ago, Isaiah Thomas was just another guy. Now he's a great scorer, so he's been able to improve his game offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if he was serious about it, I think he can get himself into a position where he's no longer a liability. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be that lockdown guy. He's not going to be Patrick Beverly. He's not going to be all NBA defensive player or team. But you can improve your game enough to where you're not a liability, and I just think he chooses not to. I think there's a lot of guys, Kyrie Irving, another guy. He just chooses not to play defense. He doesn't care enough to put in the effort to become a good defender. I mean, outside of LeBron James, Cleveland has nobody who could play defense.
It's aggravating because, like you said, maybe they could if they put forth more effort.
But, you know, the game is so focused on offense and high scoring. And
it is.
You know, look at the big guys. I mean, when we were younger, how many good defensive centers and power forwards were there in the NBA?
A lot.
Now there's a handful.
Yeah, at the most.
You know, and I think it's because these guys, I think it started with Dirk Nowitzki and Kevin Garnett. Big guys who can shoot from the outside. And I think the defensive game really hurt because of it. I mean, Hakeem Olajuwon was never going to make three-pointers. He probably could if he wanted to, but his game was down low, back to the basket, great footwork, amazing defensive player, really good offensive player. I still think he's the best center ever because of all that. But now you don't have that package.
I would say, you know, when you say the best center ever, that's such a boast. But what I will say, Magnum, is maybe the best all-around center. Because like you said, Hakeem Olajuwon did it all.
Yeah, and
you
didn't David see Robinson, that. Another guy, did it all. You know, I mean, I think, and I could be wrong, I think David Robinson is the last player to have a quadruple-double. I think he had 10 blocks, 10 rebounds, double-digit points, and I think he had 10 assists.
That's crazy.
Amazing. And he was the admiral. You know, he was 7 feet tall, and he did that. So I think, you know, the game has changed to the point where if you want to be a good defender, you could be a good defender. I don't think it's a case where it was in the 90s where the really good defenders were just head and shoulders above everyone else. I think today the really good defenders are guys who choose
to play defense.
To play defense.
Yeah, to a degree, I will coincide and agree with you on that. But overall, Mags, you need to see more defense still. I think that, especially like guys like Isaiah Thomas, everyone talks about his inability to play defense. You would think that would motivate a guy, and you use the term, I don't think Isaiah Thomas is a superstar, but you did use that term. A superstar would morph into being a better defensive player.
Well, that was kind of my point,
he would hear all this, and he'd say, I can't play defense, watch this.
Yeah.
There's an ego associated with it. I don't think he can because he doesn't step up and do that.
Well, I think that's because he's focused so much on becoming a better offensive player. Okay. That his game, you know.
But he's hurting his team.
Well, but a lot of guys hurt their team.
But you want to get to that next level and get over the hump.
He should want to. You would think, yeah. You know, you would.
Because
you
I'll
would
tell you right now, he's going to see a guy playing opposite of him, playing the two position in Jason Tatum, that is going to absolutely show him how to play defense.
Well,
because Jason Tatum out of Duke was a defensive, now I won't say defensive specialist by any means,
well,
but the kid can play defense.
Well, I think he got exposed a little bit against South Carolina in the NCAA tournament, but
he did.
You know, maybe he just had a bad game, you know. I mean, that's possible. You know, that's certainly within the realm of possibility. I mean, he was a pretty good player all year for Duke, but I think with Isaiah Thomas, he has to, and all these guys, you know, that you mentioned they hurt their team. Well, he also helps his team tremendously with his offensive game. So, you know, in his mind, he may think, oh, it's a trade-off where, oh, well, I've given my team so much on offense that the guys who don't give us as much, and that would be, I don't know if that's the case, that would be a very selfish mindset.
Yeah, I don't, you know, but, I don't know, man.
But I think a lot of these guys, I think they're in their minds, they think that it's not cool
the
to play defense.
Best player in the world right now plays great defense.
Yeah, but he is. That's why he's the best player in the world, because he does everything. But not every guy can be LeBron James.
I'm not saying they can, but they can. There are guys that, according to you, could be better defensively if they chose to be.
I think every player in the NBA could be better defensively if they chose to be.
Yeah, it's an offensive showcase right now.
Well, that's just it. And you know what?
Every team except for one in the league averages over 100 points a game. That's disgusting, man.
Well, and every team in the one team in the league really focuses on defense, as opposed to, you know, their game starts on the defensive end, that I'm sure you're going to talk about them coming up, so I won't mention them. But, you know, they really focus on defense. Defense creates offense. And, you know, that's the way I was taught to play the game. And when I coached, that's the way I coached. If you don't play defense, you're on the bench.
Well, Megs, defense, the oldest cliche in sports is what? Defense wins championships in every sport.
But and let's be honest, the Atlanta Falcons lost the Super Bowl because they got exposed defensively in that Super Bowl and blew a 25-point lead. They make one defensive stop.
And it's a whole different ballgame. They're Super Bowl champs,
yeah. And we're talking about, hey, can they repeat? Is Matt Ryan the best quarterback in the NFL? Everything completely changed because of a defensive lapse. I mean, maybe they ran out of gas. Who knows? But, you know, defense, without defense, I mean, even you look back at those great UNLV teams in the early 90s. I mean, they were, I still to this day think those are the 90-91 years for UNLV. I still think those were the, at least in my lifetime, I never got to see the UCLA teams with John Wooden. I wasn't around. But I still think those were the two best, or that era for UNLV. I still think that was the best college basketball team I've ever seen play, because they were men among boys, but they were unbelievably sound on the defensive end of the floor. And everything, I mean, they had the amoeba defense.
Well, they were their one player that didn't make it in the NBA, Anderson Hunt, was a hell of a defensive basketball player.
Yeah, I mean,
that was really his specialty. He was the glue back there, and the one guy that didn't make it, the National Basketball Association, and yet his defense was a huge reason they were as good as they were.
Yeah, I mean, Augman was a good defender. Larry Johnson, great all-around player. Greg Anthony, good player all around. I mean, but those guys, defense was such a major part of their offense, and that was one of the things that Tark really, pushed, you know. And I don't know. I just think it's such a different era now, where defense is kind of like an afterthought to a lot of guys, because I got to get my numbers. I got to get my...
Well, Mags, we've been talking about it. The NBA is a different game now. We're talking about big men. If you're a big man that doesn't have a perimeter game anymore, you're not playing in the league. You're going to be in Europe.
That's why
It's incredible, man. I mean, there is no more back-to-the-basket, 7 feet tall players. It just, you can't survive in the NBA for one reason. They won't throw the ball into you.
Yeah, nobody goes down low.
They're not going to throw the ball down low.
Unless it's a fast break and the big guy happens to be open under the basket, generally... You know, a guy like Zach Randolph, he is a dying breed in the NBA. I mean, he has absolutely no perimeter game, but he's amazing at what he does. I mean,
the old school wide body.
Yeah, he understands, and I love watching Zach Randolph play, because he is kind of a throwback.
He's a low post player.
Yeah, and he is, like I said, he's kind of an endangered species in the NBA. The big guy who plays with his back to the basket, and, you know, he gets down and dirty. And you know, Shaquille O'Neal was one of those guys, too. I mean, unfortunately, he's been out of the NBA now for, what, 5-6 years? So, you know, it's just, and I'm not saying the game today is bad. I like the game. I like a lot of offense. But when we talk about the lack of defense by certain players in the NBA, I will always say it's a lack of effort, as opposed to a lack of they can't play defense. I mean, these guys didn't get to where they were because they couldn't play defense.
They might be able to play defense at the collegiate level. You know, you just don't know. I would tend to agree that if people focused more on defense, they could play better, and they choose not to. But I still think that the NBA is a different level now. I think that playing defense is so much harder because of the fact that guys are shooting from the perimeter all the time. How do you defend that? You got to get out. You got to literally get out and stop them in space. It's really hard. But, Mags, real quickly, because we do got to take a break in a minute, I want to tell you, you know, mentioning Kyrie Irving and the Cleveland Cavaliers, I am blown away by the developments over the last couple days.
Yeah, it was a bit shocking.
I think most people can. I mean, for rescuing his career from the depths of the draft lottery and delivering him into the championship chase, Kyrie Irving will forever be grateful to LeBron James. Together, they made history in Cleveland. Titles last forever. But as you know, Mags, history shows that partnerships are temporary arrangements. You know that Kyrie Irving averaged 22.4 points in the three seasons per game in the three seasons he played with LeBron, more than any other player that played with LeBron in his history. And yet he wants out of Cleveland. He wants to be the man. They're saying that the teams that are most likely the ones he's interested in, the San Antonio Spurs, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Miami Heat, and the New York Knicks. Mags, every one of those teams are a mistake, except for maybe San Antonio.
I don't see San Antonio happen for the reason we spent the discussion we literally just had for the last 10 minutes.
Defense.
Kyrie Irving does not play enough defense.
For Popovich,
and...
Yeah, but come on, if Kyrie Irving wants to go to San Antonio and Popovich can pull that off, you put him with Kawhi Leonard right now?
No, but there you go. Here's the thing. He wants to be the guy. He wants to be the number one guy on the team. If he goes to San Antonio, he's not.
But he's never going to win it. Is he going to go to New York? And Jimmy Dolan is going to, as long as he owns the Knicks, they're never going to do anything.
He could go to Miami and be the guy.
What are they going to do? What's Miami going to do?
Miami was right there in the playoff hunt. You know, they don't have
Hassan the goods.
Whiteside. Miami is a, if they had Kyrie Irving, they go from that 8-9 probably in the East to a 5 or 6.
Max, we're talking about he's still under 25 years old. You know, I guess Miami could look to build a team.
Minnesota, he could go to Minnesota and be the guy too.
Pat Riley is a great architect, as we know.
Although I don't know if him, Jimmy Butler, and Wiggins.
I think you still run the same problem in Minnesota with Kyrie Irving. You got a guy like Jimmy Butler, who's another top 10 player in the league. Okay, you've got some other guys on this team. I don't know that's a good fit for him.
He doesn't play enough defense for Tom Thibodeau.
My point is you got a guy that could go to a team and help form a super team. The only place that, looking at this, yes, Minnesota's a possibility, but San Antonio is the only place, because now you've got two pieces of a super team in place there. I understand he wants the ball, but they also want to win. I mean, you wonder, I'm looking at Oklahoma.
Does he really want to win?
No, maybe he doesn't.
He already won. He already got his title. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he just wants to be the guy. Maybe he looks at Russell Westbrook and says, hey, I could be Russ Westbrook.
Yeah, well, now Russ Westbrook has to deal with distributing to Paul George.
Well, that may not work. You know, we'll find out. I mean, grab your popcorn and see. But I think I don't want to play with LeBron James, I think that's an excuse. I think Kyrie Irving is a smart enough guy to realize all of this is going to crumble.
Well, yeah, but
in
Mags,
1 year.
But the point is, right now, this year, if Cleveland can make one more lousy move, they're right there. They're the best team in the Eastern Conference still.
But they're not going to beat Golden State.
But they can get to the finals, and anything can happen. 2 years ago, they won four straight games to win the NBA Finals. It can happen.
That's because Draymond Green was an idiot and acted stupid. Curry was hurt.
I'm not disagreeing. I am saying that they are as close as anybody to the Golden State Warriors, and there's nowhere else you can go to find that. Listen, we got to go to break. We're going to come back. I do want to talk about the British Open. It looks like Spieth is now back to 8-under again. He was at 9-under and 7-under. Him and Kuchar battling back and forth. We were talking about before the show, that Matt Kuchar sooner or later would hopefully win a major. He's up there in his late 30s now, maybe even early 40s. He's getting up there. I think he's due. And Jordan Spieth, you just usually do not see this guy fall apart like he did on the first four holes today. Really surprising. Listen, we're going to go to break. You're listening to Out of Line. This is Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman. He's Magnum behind the wheel of steel. This is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. You can catch us streaming live at www.lvsportsnetwork.com. Click on the Fox icon and click on listen live, and here you are, man. British Open. It is the final day, man, Sunday. Jordan Spieth started today with a three-stroke lead. He was 11 under par, shooting a 5-under in round three. You know, he shot in the 60s all three of his first three rounds. Only 11 players have done that in majors history where they've shot 63. And out of the 11 players, he being the 11th, out of the first 10, 8 won the prospective tournament they were in when they did that. Spieth fighting to win this one. It looks like probably him or Matt Kuchar, although you've got that kid in the clubhouse. What is his name again? I had it here a second ago, Mags. It's Haotung Lee, who shot a 7-under 63 today and is 6-under in the clubhouse right now.
Yeah, that kid shot three rounds in the 60s this week. So, you know, if not for maybe a rough Friday, he actually could be the leader. And
it's crazy.
He's ranked 107th in the world. Yeah. That's amazing. And you know, I don't follow golf.
He's younger than Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, he's a really young guy. But, you know, the amazing thing is China, that's where he's from, does not have a huge golfing tradition. You know, I think when we think of good golfers, we think of Matsuyama from Japan. We think of all the females in the LPGA from South Korea. There's been a couple of guys from Thailand who've had some pretty moderate success. But, you know, relatively a growing, a young sport in China. It's growing, obviously. And if this kid can shoot, you know, play in majors like this, and maybe he'll fall off the planet and we'll never hear of him again. But if he becomes successful, there will be a wave of Chinese golfers who all of a sudden become really good because it's a huge country. I mean, there's over a billion people in China.
You need one hero. Exactly. One hero.
Like Yao Ming did so much for basketball in China, and not just China, but in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he brought the sport to parts of the world where it really hadn't been. The Philippines, they've always loved basketball there. You know, they've never really had a guy play in the NBA from the Philippines. But it's when I lived there, I could not believe how big the NBA and basketball are in that country. And it's crazy because, you know, they have like their own version of like, you know, Rucker Park. They've got their outdoor games where you'll see guys at construction sites. They'll put up a basketball hoop, and they play barefoot on rocks and dirt and concrete.
What about golf? We're talking about the U.S. Open.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is he will grow the sport in China, and this one tournament could create a whole wave of guys who see this. They're like, you know what? That looks like a lot of fun. I want to go out there and play. I hope it happens because, you know, I've always felt the more athletes that come from different parts of the world, the better the game becomes because you have so much more competition. And in a game like golf where you have guys from every corner of the globe, I mean, you look at the leaderboard, you've got a couple of Americans. You've got an English guy, Matthew Southgate. You've got Lehman from Australia, Koepka, another American, Rory McIlroy, Northern Ireland. You know, you've got a Swede up there, South African. You know, so it's even the Spaniard, Cabrera. So, you know, it's a game that anyone can play in any part of the world. It hasn't caught on in China. I have a feeling that may be about to change.
It'll be interesting to see the final result of this. You know, it's weird, Mags, because I enjoy watching golf. I really do. I know I won't say it's a dying breed. It's still very, very popular, but I talk to people and they're like, how do you watch golf? I love the majors.
Yeah.
And I'll still love the TPC Sawgrass. I love watching them when they play at Pebble Beach, some of the courses in Hawaii. Just the landscape is so
gorgeous.
Those
early February tournaments that they, late January, early February, that they play in Hawaii, absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
you're looking out on like volcanoes, you know, lava rock, and it's like my buddy's actually in South Carolina right now, and he's at one of the courses where they played the Ryder Cup a couple years ago, and it's like it's really cool, you know, and it's like it's a fun game to watch on TV. I mean, especially the majors. I mean, I can't sit there and watch some of these tournaments that I've never heard of, you know, in Youngstown. It's like okay. But the majors, I think there's a certain drama and there's certain intrigue and there's a romance with the majors. And unfortunately, what's happening now is I used to really like the British. It was my favorite because it was a course that always made the guys look like me when I go out there. You know, now these guys are destroying these courses.
Well, it's the weather. The weather's been good. They had one day of bad weather, and somehow Spieth was able to manipulate.
But even the U.S. Open this year, they shot.
Well, that was ridiculous. But that was the first time it was played at that course in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they all said it was fairly easy compared. I mean, I saw the U.S. Open live mags in 1996 at Oakland Hills in Birmingham, Michigan, where Steve Jones won the tournament at 1-under par. That is typically a U.S. Open type of course, yeah, and type of scores. The British Open,
yeah, Koepka,
is...
what did he shoot, 17 under this,
yeah,
year? 16
it was crazy
under?
At, yeah, the Masters. And, you know, you talk about guys rolling. Koepka's parlayed that. I mean, he's right in the hunt in this one, too. I don't think he'll win it, but he's gonna get a top 10 finish the way that
he's
it looks.
He's a guy who could be up there because the way he drives the ball, he's got a lot of power. And he just seems like he's calm, collected. You know, I think he's a guy who could join DJ and Spieth up there and McIlroy.
Well, I hope he does. He had a really hot girlfriend at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, yeah. And Joe Buck messed her name up. But I'm waiting, and I think a lot of us are, for Ricky Fowler to break through one day. And it's like, you know, it took Sergio a long time. I hope it doesn't take Ricky that long, because Fowler's a guy who I think we all look at and we're like, you know, he's just a really cool guy, you know. He wears orange. He's got the hat with no bent brim.
I like the longer hair. I wish he would have kept the longer hair. He had that California surfer.
But he's like a rock star. You know?
He is.
And it's like, come on, dude. One. Give me one, Ricky Fowler. Come on.
I mean, come on. Jason Duffner won a PGA.
Yeah.
Not that he's a bad golfer, but I mean, he's won a major, and Ricky Fowler hasn't. That doesn't seem right. Matt Kuchar, another guy who we're watching play right here, coming down the stretch, is another guy that I would like to see get a major. Always,
yeah, he's
a good
been
guy.
Around for a long time. He's never won that major.
Quiet, just a guy you can tell is a good guy who loves the game, and I'd like to see him win.
I mean, I'll date myself here, but I remember him playing in the Masters when he was still in college at Georgia Tech, and I think he finished in the top 10 that year. I mean, he was up there.
He had game.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good player who's just never won that major. But
well, they're on the back nine now.
Maybe that changes today. I mean, he certainly has played well. He's even par for the day, and Spieth is 3 over. So you never know.
Yep. We'll see. Right now, they're both 8 under, still back nine. I think they're heading to the green on the 10th. And they are both 8 under par, Matt Kuchar and Jordan Spieth. We'll see who's going to pull that one off. I think it's going to be one of the two of them. Although if they falter and the nerves get to them with those huge galleries at the British Open, you never know. That would be something if they pull in at 6 under and Li Hautong ends up in a playoff in his first ever major at the British Open would be something else. Listen, we got to take a break. It is 20 minutes in front of the hour of 8 o'clock. We're going to come back. We got Blazin'. We have Fact This. And check out the 51s report. Pedro Lopez, the skipper. I talked to him right before the All-Star break. Pretty cool interview. You are listening to Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
That's right. It is time for Blazin'. Brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, a stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. They have two happy hours every day. And during football season, which is right around the corner, we are there every Monday night hosting the best Monday night football party in Vegas, giving away replica jerseys, wing parties, and a whole lot more. That is Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Mags, I got a couple of them. I'll start today. I'm giving two today. The first one, since we're talking the British Open, the oldest major in the history of the PGA Tour. Brandon Grace, a South African, you're talking about all over the world, Mags, did something that no one has done in 442 previous major tournaments. He shot a 62, man, 8 under par. He's 101st in the FedEx Cup rankings. And he ended up starting today, tied for 5th, 4 back. Talk about a turnaround, 8 under par. Brandon Grace was a little bit excited, maybe to win this tournament, or to maybe shoot a 62.
I finished and I knocked in the 2-footer or 3-footer. Then Zach came up to me and said, "You're in the history books." I was like, "What are you talking about?" I had no idea that, you know, 62 was obviously the lowest ever.
The lowest ever, man. Congratulations. That is one hell of a score, and that is absolutely blazing to shoot an 8-under par at any course over there in Europe. The conditions and stuff is pretty amazing. I know it was good conditions yesterday, but that's still out of this world. We got a second blazing, and Mags, you'll definitely appreciate this one. Clint Dempsey, one of the all-time most famous and greatest American soccer players, reached a milestone yesterday coming off of the bench against Costa Rica. And what did he do? Well, he got an assist and his 57th goal, which is in U.S. men's national team history, the most ever, tied with Landon Donovan. Pretty darn impressive. He got that goal and, again, and an assist in the USA's win in the semifinal of the 2017 Gold Cup. They will play the winner of Mexico and Jamaica in the Gold Cup finals. It is the United States' 10th Gold Cup. The final will be held at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara. I was wondering, Mags, are you going to go to that?
No.
You're not going?
No, I don't have the funds to do it. So
should be pretty interesting. Well, anyways, Clint Dempsey, what did he think after he got that 57th career goal?
Coming back from two heart procedures, being able to still play at this level and living a dream, so I'm happy.
Living a dream, two heart procedures, Mags. Yeah. I would say that guy is flipping blazing. What you got for me?
Well, I'm going to go in your wheelhouse. I'm going to go with Scott Blumstein. Who is Scott Blumstein? Well, Scott Blumstein.
$8 million richer.
Yeah, he's $8 million richer after he ended up defeating Daniel Ott in the final hand of the 2017 edition of the World Series of Poker. Blumstein, an accountant from New Jersey, Brigantine, New Jersey, which is actually right outside of Atlantic City. It's a pretty nice area on the beach, but he's an accountant. He's a graduate of Temple University, so he's doing Bill Cosby proud, representing Temple, the Owls. And he won the final hand. It was the 246th hand of the final table. And these two, Ott and Blumstein, played 60 hands with just the two of them and nothing but bricks of money and a gold bracelet separating them. Blumstein's final hand of ace of hearts and two of diamonds ended up being stronger than Ott, who went all in with an ace of diamonds and an eight of diamonds. Community cards were jack of spades, six of spades, five of hearts, seven of hearts, and a two.
The deuce.
Of hearts. So
the duck.
Blumstein wins the final hand of the World Series of Poker with a pair of twos.
Hey, Doyle Brunstein won back-to-back World Series of Poker champions with 10 deuce, his famous hand, and it was an incredible final table.
Well, amazing, too. 120,000 entrants from all over the world. It broke attendance records, and there were 7,200 participants in this year's WSOP. So there were 120,000 entrants who tried qualify, but...
Yeah, qualified in overall, Mags. I played in the biggest, still the biggest main event ever was 2006 when Jamie Gold won it. I played in that one. I played in 2011. And while the final table was going on last night, I'll quickly brag, I was at Binion's, of course, one of our illustrious sponsors, and I finished fourth in their tournament. Only 83 players, but fourth place was good for over a grand. I'll take it. Listen, we are short on time. I want to make sure we get to Pedro Lopez, so it is time for fact this, fact, O.J. Simpson won his release from prison this past Thursday morning when he was granted parole after spending 9 years in a minimum security prison about 90 miles outside of Reno. He will be out in October. This is something you cannot be mad about. The judicial system got it wrong 23 years ago. You can't do a make good on a completely different case. Had he not more than likely brutally murdered Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, being O.J. Simpson, he probably would have gotten off owing some restitution and maybe some community service for this last crime. Instead, he got up to 33 years in prison and served 9 of them. It was a joke. He was in there for that long for crimes he committed, especially here in Vegas, where there are such bigger fish to fry. That was a small make good for what he probably did in Brentwood in 1994. And anyone who is not a bold-faced liar knows this. I hate that he is free again, but in my opinion, he should have been euthanized in 1994. And if you think I'm being harsh or should ease up on this since that happened nearly a quarter century ago, I strongly urge you to Google and look at the end result of what OJ more than likely did to his ex-wife and a guy that was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And if you think he is guilty of double murder in the first degree, then let me know if you still think he should be walking around a free man if we should forget about this. However, that being said, for this particular crime, he has to be released, and it sucks. Get it right the first time, and we are not having this conversation. Right, Mags?
Yeah, but where I will disagree with you is we can all say that he did the crime. However, the justice system, I think, worked in the Brown-Goldman murder case because the prosecution failed on multiple levels. And, you know, I still think he did it. I think if the prosecution does their job a little bit better, O.J. Simpson goes away for a very, very, very long time.
Of course he does. He lost the civil suit and owed millions of dollars in restitution, had to sell his Heisman Trophy and everything he had. We all know that more than likely, like say 99.7% chance, he committed this nasty ass double homicide and deserves to be in prison forever, if not dead, if he actually did it. But you can't keep him in jail for this crime. It's amazing he sat in jail for 9 years over a crime that most people would have been out with on probation, might have spent 6 months in a very minimum security prison. He spent 9 years because they were doing a make good, and you can't do that. It was almost a joke to our judicial system. Listen, that's fact this. We're almost out of time, so I'm going to play a little bit of this interview with Pedro Lopez. It is the 51s report. Brought to you by the Las Vegas 51s. They're out of this world. I talked to Pedro Lopez right before the All-Star break, and they have definitely been struggling this year, but they have a couple of great players down there at Cashman Field. And you know what? I'm not going to be able to play that because my battery just died, Mag, so we're not going to be able to play. We'll get him next week on the system. But with the 51s, they've really been struggling this year, Mags, more so in the past. But you know what? We got a little bit spoiled for four straight years with Wally Backman as skipper. They were in contention every year. They made the playoffs a couple of years, and they were right in contention until the last week. But things have changed. We can see it up at the big club. The pitching staff is not the same as they've been.
Well, it starts at the major league level. The Mets have been a complete disaster. I know because I'm a Mets fan. They've had way too many injuries to overcome, and that has an effect, a trickle-down effect, all throughout the minors because you've got a lot of guys who probably shouldn't be in Las Vegas who are in Las Vegas, and you know that's good that they're getting this experience at a higher level, but let's be honest. I mean, when your major league franchise has tons of injuries, it's hard to have success at the AAA level because you have guys shuttling back and forth. And it's hard to gain any continuity. I mean, I'm not making an excuse, but let's be honest. The Mets have been a complete disaster this year on and off the field. And, you know, it seems to me like Terry Collins is kind of He's run his course. I'm not so sure Sandy Alderson is the man for the job with the Mets anymore. It starts with the ownership. They're a joke. And, you know, I don't really want to go off on the Mets because I know this is a 51 segment. But, you know, people who were like, oh, the 51 stink. Well, there's a reason why they're having some struggles this season. And it begins and ends with the fact that the parent club is having lots of struggles in the injury department.
Well, they are. There's a couple things real quickly that I want to say about the 51s. Number one.
Get it out of your head. Tim Tebow's not coming here.
That was the second thing, man. Very good. It's amazing you read my mind. But the first thing is Ahmad Rosario and Dominic Smith are two incredible future all-stars that you can check out at Cashman Field in a very intimate environment. Get their autographs and get down there and get a picture with them. Ahmad Rosario, the shortstop. Dominic Smith, the first baseman. These two guys are future all-stars. And I was going to say, Mags, I'm not saying Tim Tebow is going to do a thing at the AAA level. I don't know if he'll ever be on the big club, but you want to pack Cashman Field? I'm just talking about pure money. What a great showcase in Las Vegas for Tim Tebow. With all the tourists and out-of-towners we get, that place will be packed like the major league games. When the Cubs and the Reds played her this year, I think Cashman Field would see that many people at a couple of games for Tim Tebow. I'm just talking about revenue, brother, and excitement and interest. And everything's a wash for the Mets this year anyways. They're not going anywhere. Why not bring Tim Tebow up? I know it's a joke. I know Jim Gemma would probably smack me, but I think they should come. Out of line, out of time. Brian, I want to thank Max. Thank everyone. We'll see you next week, 8 to 9. Same time, same place.